Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for hanging out with us. Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you live from downtown Las Vegas in Circa Resort and Casino. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Michael Lombardi's out there at his office in Jersey. Have a great hour ahead here on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll take a deep dive into the Philadelphia Eagles, who continue to take money in the NFC East. Marcus Hayes of the Philadelphia Inquirer is going to stop by. Mm-hmm. Also, at the end of the hour, we're going to get into the most expensive and least expensive offenses and defenses, and how that money has actually led up to a team's success or lack thereof, which I think will be fun to get into. But Michael, where I want to start this hour actually is the fact that talking season in college football has begun. While we still have to wait a couple more weeks for NFL training camps, yes, we're getting press conferences, everything underway with college football today. Here in Las Vegas, the Big 12 is going to get underway out at Allegiant Stadium. The Mountain West and the two-pack, formerly the Pac-12, I guess they're still calling it that, I don't know, they're going to join up with the Mountain West here at Circa over the next couple of days. And it's exciting. It's starting to get my juices flowing for college football. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Before too long, right? The last week of August is usually when we get the first games, right? It mm-hmm. We don't have to wait for Labor Day for that. So that's always a good thing. And look, I think, you know, one of the benefits about VSiN and what we do here at our network is the ability to catch you up on things that, like, you got to get caught up on. And college football is a very challenging sport to study and to keep pace with. I mean, the NFL's 32 teams, college football's, let's just say there's 100 teams that you have to study, and that's why the guide comes in so handy. Where are the quarterbacks? You know, where do they go? How, you know, does Cameron Wake make that much of a difference for Mario Cristobal's Miami team, or does Will Rogers help Washington? What about Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma, or is Moore, the quarterback from UCLA, going to make it? I mean, there's so much in there that you have to really get that guide to help you, and I'm excited to really study it to see what actually happens.
Yeah, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide is going to be a must-have for anybody who likes college football, and especially if you're betting the sport. There's actually 134 teams in college football, FBS, right now. And speaking of, to the comparison to the NFL, 32 teams in the National Football League, 33 college football teams over the last 2 years have shifted conferences. So that alone is just something to find out. Where are all of these teams going to be this year? I was talking to some friends recently who didn't even realize that Oregon and Washington were going to be in the Big Ten this year. That's happening. So there's a lot of movement, turnover, the head coaching ripple effects with Nick Saban retiring and Jim Harbaugh moving on to the NFL. There's a lot to catch up on, no doubt. And while we're talking college football, I do just want to reemphasize, I am super high on all things Utah Utes this season. And if there is a group of five team, I think they can make a push for the college football playoff, I think it's Boise State. So I thought that that was appropriate to say while we have the Big 12 and Mountain West going on here in Vegas. But go ahead.
I'm with you. Don't ever underestimate Boise State. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that they made a coaching change, went through the interim coach and kept him on. And then Utah, with Kyle Whittingham's team, to me, is always going to be, they're Big Ten ready now.
Yeah.
The way they've always been, they're more of a Big Ten team. I know they went to the Big 12, but I think they're going to be a handful for those teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, and you think about just Cam Rising, their quarterback, coming back alone after missing all of last season with the torn ACL. They get him back. They get Brant Keithy back, who prior to that year when Dalton Kincaid got drafted in the first round, Keithy was actually the better tight end on that team that season before he got hurt in September of 2022. So, like, a lot of talent is coming back on that Utah roster. They're the favorite to win the Big 12 for a reason, and I think that they probably do get it done in their first year and make their first college football playoff with the expanded format in year one. While we're talking season in college football, Joe Burrow wants his play to get people talking, apparently, this year. He was on Barstool's Pardon My Take podcast this week, Michael, and was asked about people potentially forgetting how good he is or fading from relevance due to the injuries that he has had. Take a listen.
Do you think people have forgotten about Joe Burrow?
I believe that.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you get hurt, though. You don't play football, people forget about you.
Yeah, which I like the spot you're in right now, because I feel like
I love the spot I'm in.
Yeah, like AFC, everyone's like, oh, well, you know, Josh, Lamar, and Patrick, CJ Stroud. It's like you're forgetting one guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But again, that's part of the game. If you're not out there and people aren't watching you, then there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give people to talk about. something to talk about this year.
What did you think, Michael? How'd you unpack that?
You know what I like about Joe Burrow is he's confident but not cocky. You know, I think to me that he's not arrogant in the way he is confident. And I think there's a fine line you have to balance there. He knows it's all about what he does on the field. And he didn't take it personally that he wasn't being recognized because, as he said, he wasn't out there. So I think he's got self-awareness. There's a perfect example of self-awareness for a player. You know, that's somebody you can coach. That's somebody that's going to get better. And I think he has a mindset this year to really put Cincinnati on his back and say, okay, fellas, let's go. Last year, remember, we had the calf injury that happened in camp, and we thought he tore his Achilles. Remember that day we were doing the show when he went down on the field? We all thought he lost his Achilles. And so he was able to – it was a calf, which was still problematic for the first half, first three or four games. It wasn't until the Arizona game out in the desert that he threw – the ball more effectively off his lower body, but then the wrist injury happened and that all changed. So I have really good faith in this kid. I like his competitiveness. I like his instincts. I like his awareness, self-awareness, and his football awareness are really good. And I can listen to him talk because he's confident but not cocky.
And to his credit, he's the one quarterback that's kind of been the Kansas City Chiefs kryptonite, right? That's they were calling Arrowhead Burrowhead for a time because of the way that he would come in there and win games, especially in the playoffs. And so he is somebody that is highly touted, obviously, in the MVP market. He's the fourth shortest shot to win MVP. So he's not that forgotten about. I will say that the Cincinnati Bengals, by the way, a 13-1 shot to win this year's Super Bowl. And if you go look through our NFL betting guide, a lot of people are very high on Cincinnati, yourself included, Michael Lombardi. Last couple minutes here. Let's get to what's on Michael's mind every day this offseason. We are asking Michael what he's thinking about. It doesn't have to be football. It doesn't even have to be sports sometimes. This one is. But what is on your mind today?
You know, I love the draft. I mean, I'm a draft Nick at heart. I've always been that since I was a kid. I've loved it. That's why I got into sports. That's why I wanted to become executive in the NFL. But I was watching, you know, the Team USA prepare for the Olympics, and Cooper Flagg just jumped out at me. This young man from Maine who went to Monteverde Academy down in Florida after he was the freshman player of the year in the state of Maine. Now, that's not saying a lot. Al Davis would have laughed at me if I'd have brought that up. No. Maine doesn't have good basketball. But anyway, no disrespect to Maine. You know, he dominated, and he goes down to Florida, and he dominates down there at a high, high level. And now he's coming on the court. And, you know, you read what some of the guys are saying about him. I mean, it really took me back. I mean, Devin Booker, you see how bad he wants it. Coop was playing out of his mind. I mean, Jackson Davis from the Warriors said he's not afraid of anyone. He's going to go at you. I just thought it was really impressive how he took over. I can't wait to watch him play at Duke this year. And I really can say this without knowing all the players in the next year NBA draft, that he looks like he has the making of not only a varsity athlete, unlike Tony Soprano, but he has the makings of the number one overall pick in the draft.
Well, and it's crazy, too. Like, this guy is 17 years old, but he looks like a fully formed grown man, and he's shooting threes on Anthony Davis. He's making dunks on Bam Adebayo. Yeah. Like, he looked awesome out there. And for anybody who doesn't know what the select team is, it's typically a group of young NBA players that are getting together to scrimmage with the Team USA to just get them prepared for the Olympics, right? It's very rare to have a college player on it. There's only been a couple of them. There has never been one that has not played a single college game. That just really goes to show how talented this young player must be to get that opportunity and what people think of him.
It really is. I mean, and it's going to be exciting to watch, you know, and you know he's going to be one and done. I mean, look, you can just tell right now. In fact, I'm actually surprised he's going to roll in Duke, you know. Usually these guys go to the G League, but since the G League's kind of gone, they can't do that anymore. And he's probably going to get taller. I mean, the way he handled the ball at 6'8", the way he ran up and down the court, I mean, that was really impressive. And, look, his mother played basketball at Maine, and she was a great player there, team captain as a senior and all that stuff. But this kid's, to me, you know, when you're sitting out there and you're in all, you just not in all of who you're playing against and competing against, and get the players to talk the way they did about him, it was impressive.
The, according to ESPN Sports and Information Group, the college players that had made it, he's the first collegiate player to make the select team since Doug McDermott and Marcus Smart in 2013. McDermott had played 110 games in college at Creighton and was a two-time consensus All-American. Smart was coming off a National Freshman of the Year and Big 12 Player of the Year season as a freshman. So, again, this guy has not played a minute of college basketball on the court yet and was hanging with the big boys in the NBA here in Vegas. That very, very cool. Also, did you see this video, Michael, of the fact that like half of Team USA can't spin a basketball, including Steph Curry? Watch this.
Do you know how to spin a ball on your finger?
So I can do a lot of things with a basketball. A lot of things.
Try. I ain't really my thing.
You think all of your teammates for USAB can do it?
Yeah.
That is the one thing that I cannot do.
I can give you like a half a second, maybe. 1,000, 2,000.
Hallie? At the point guard, don't know how to do it.
Tyrese?
Oh, that's Gen Z.
Do you know how to spin a ball on your finger?
No, I cannot.
No?
Probably the only guy on the team who can.
Joel? That's sickening.
KD said, Joel, the big man, that's sickening. He can't do it. What is happening? That blew my mind.
Hey, that would exhaust him. He can't. I mean, it's a good thing he didn't. It would exhaust him. He's too tired to do that. We wouldn't want him to extend himself that much with spinning the ball on his fingers. He needs his rest, Stormy. Come on. He got to have his rest. The man's tired.
Joel Embiid and Steph Curry can't spin a basketball on their finger. Like two of the top players in the world. Unbelievable.
It's eye-hand coordination, making shots, yeah.
Too exhausting, says Michael. So good.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL preseason training camp's getting underway in less than a month, and lucky for you, our VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get instant access to the guide with comprehensive team profiles, power rankings, win total predictions, proven betting systems and trends like how to win with our betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, and awards like MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access the guide, you do need to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for a limited time. We're offering this at an unbeatable price. You get a full year of VSiN Pro for $199 instead of the usual $240. And as a special bonus, we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access. Everything we do, including the daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, and so much more. Head to vsin.com/subscribe now. If you use our promo code Lombardi, that'll get you the 13 months of VSiN Pro for $199 and instant access to the guide. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And as we are looking ahead to the NFL season, who better to talk all things NFL with than Marcus Hayes on the Progressive Guest Line of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We love talking Philadelphia sports here on this program, as evidenced by what we had just at the end of the last break when we were talking about Joel Embiid not being able to spin a basketball. Marcus, how are we doing today? Welcome in.
I'm better than Joel, I'll tell you that.
Especially when Michael Lombardi is talking about him, huh?
I
speak the truth, Stormy, that's all.
Nobody trolls Joe like Mike does, man. But I will say, he's been consistent. For 11 years, he's been consistent.
That's true. And hey,
I've been right too. I mean, you know, I didn't realize getting to the second round was the only thing that mattered. I actually thought championships mattered, Marcus.
Well, you know, but I will say this, like in the NHL years ago, there was a question whether like the Stanley Cup mattered to the international players. And honestly, in the NBA, there's talk like maybe the Larry O'Brien trophy isn't as important as your next podcast that you're going to run like Paul George does or Pat Bev, you know, those guys. So, yeah, you wonder where the priorities are sometimes.
You know, I wasn't going to go down the basketball road with you, but since you just opened the door to Paul George, what did you think of the comments that he had breaking down the offer from the Clippers and then ultimately coming to Philly?
You know, I just kind of found that on social media this morning. It's pretty damning. I mean, if you are with the Clippers right now, if you're Kawhi, you're like, what in the world? We all thought that the issue was they wouldn't give him a fourth-year max, and that was it. They wouldn't give him a third year with a no trade. So that to me says, hey, the Clippers were sort of dipping their toe in the water, and they wanted to let Paul George know where he stood.
Yeah, I think to me, for some reason, I think the Clippers have just decided, even though they have that stadium, that they've seen enough of paying these guys all this money and not getting past the second round. I think Steve Ballmer is a little bit like Pat Riley saying, yo, wait a minute, hold on here. We're not winning with you. Why are we going to pay you to win without you? Pay you and still pay you. So I think it was definitely a mind shift by the owners. So let's talk, speaking of owners, let's talk Philadelphia Eagles here for a second. I saw, and I wonder what your commentary on this, when they asked Jalen Hurts, they said, you know, whose offense is it? And he said it was 95% Kellen Moore. That kind of took me by surprise because I thought they would go back to the Shane Steichen style of offense from 2 years ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, thank you very much, Mike. Jalen Hurts made a lot of news when he hesitated in a question before that, talking about how Nick Sirianni was handling this sort of transfer of power, more power to Kellen Moore, less offensive power to Nick Sirianni. So Jalen kind of bungled that answer. But the news of the day to me was that 95% of the offense, or at least 95% of the play that gets called at the line of scrimmage, even if you have the same base stuff, is going to be new. That is astonishing because you've got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, four offensive linemen, Dallas Goedert. You're installing a new offense for these guys in kind of a make-or-break year for both Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. Astonishing. And, I mean, I don't know that I would do it that way, but I think everything got so stale. And let's be honest. I mean, Mike, you evaluate guys, or you've done it all your life. Jalen Hurts wasn't the same Jalen Hurts in 2023 that he was in 2022 and 2021. I think the wear and tear, the Michael Vick wear and tear, the Cam Newton wear and tear, has caught up with him a little bit earlier than we thought.
And he's a quarterback, too, who, like, every year from college to the NFL prior to last season, it seemed like had steadily made improvements up until that, you know, year where he's second in the MVP voting. It was, you're right, a significant step back for him last year. When you look at this Eagles team and Nick Sirianni, who a lot of people were talking about being on the potential chopping block at the end of last year, a lot has changed from that time to now with bringing in Saquon Barkley and a lot of the pieces that have been added to the point where this team is now the favorite in the NFC East. They're talked about in contending the NFC. What do you view the ceiling as this team for this year?
I mean, it's got to be, you know, an NFC championship or bust. I can't see Nick Sirianni surviving a season where they just make the playoffs or just win one game. I can see Jalen Hurts surviving it because of the salary cap implications, but Nick Sirianni's got to win two playoff games this postseason in order to keep his job. Not just because he's a first-time coach whose team went backwards as soon as they lost Shane Steichen as the offensive coordinator and Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator, but also because he has two ready-made replacements in Kellen Moore, who 2 or 3 years ago was a top head coaching candidate, and Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, who's been a head coach. So it's plug and play. If Nick might be the first coach in the Jeffrey Lurie ownership era, you know, besides the Chip Kelly one game thing, to not last the season. If they get off to a slow start, if they start 2-4, you might be saying, "Hey, Coach Moore, or, hey, Coach Fangio."
Hey, Marcus, talk to me a little bit about Jalen Hurts' body language, sitting off to the side, kind of not engaging his teammates. Did you notice that he was more involved in the OTAs and minicamps this offseason than he was last year? Because last year he looked somewhat aloof all the time.
You know, he often looks aloof. He has kind of looked aloof even before he ascended to the starter's job. I don't think it's aloofness. I just think he's kind of socially awkward. You know, I think that he is just not one of the guys, quote unquote. He's very, very straight-laced. The Christian stuff that comes out of his mouth is how he lives his life. The locker room's atmosphere in the NFL is not, you know, super whitewashed. It's not very proper. And he's a very proper guy. So I think he's actually made conscious efforts to make sure guys know that he doesn't think he's better than them, that they're disappointing him, that they're not living up to his quote-unquote That's the word he uses all the time. I don't think he that's what it comes off as, but I don't think that's his intent, and I think he's learning. As a young man, often has to learn lots of lessons. He's learning that that's how it looks, so maybe he changes his behavior and his demeanor a little bit.
That's nice to hear that he's recognizing the perception, because it's interesting. Like, I wonder, in your opinion, as you were watching last season unfold, if as you're winning, people aren't really noticing those types of things. But then when you go 1-6 down the stretch, people are kind of micro analyzing every little detail of what they're seeing, whether we're fans or media folks watching from the outside looking in.
Well, there's another dynamic to that. And you're right. Yes, it's a good thing that he recognizes that what it looks like probably isn't the best thing. It might be a distraction, right? But there's a real reality in that at some point last season, the coaching staff, especially the head coach Nick Sirianni, started treating Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown favorably compared to the rest of the team. One player told me that. Another player told me that, you know, A.J. Brown's antics on the field and off the field set a bad example. So there was a double standard. And I think Jalen's conscious of that as well. But that's something that Nick has to address, and that's something that Jalen has to address, because it's a real thing. This isn't something I went looking for. I didn't ask leading questions. I asked very banal questions and got very pointed answers. I've been in NFL locker rooms for 34 years. I've only seen that phenomenon maybe once or twice before, and it was catastrophic all of those times.
Marcus, real quick, we got about a minute left. What do you think? Do they win the East? Do they go to the Super Bowl? Do they save Nick Sirianni's job?
Everything comes down to the two young defensive tackles. If the young defensive tackles play to their draft status, then yes. If Jordan Davis and Jalen, I can't remember Jalen's last name. If the two young defensive Carter. Tackles from Georgia,
yeah.
Yes, Carter. If they play to their capacity, if they played to their capacity last year, they didn't hit the rookie wall, this is a team that wins two playoff games and doesn't go 1-6 down the stretch. If they play to their capacity this year, this is an 11-win team that wins two playoff games.
Marcus, awesome spot. Great insight. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Marcus.
Marcus Hayes, season win total for the Philadelphia Eagles sitting at 10.5. What, Michael?
No, I think he's right. But I think more than anything, I think the conditioning of the team is so important down the stretch. That's why those guys, they gained 100 pounds, those two players, in the second half of the year.
No question about it. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rolling along on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL GM Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. For the last half hour today, we're going to dive into some expectations for teams with the most and least expensive offensive and defensive units. And here, let's start, Michael, on the offensive side of the ball. The Browns, Rams, Chiefs, Cowboys, and Falcons have the top five most expensive offensive units in the sport this year. The Browns, you wonder how much of that is just tied up in Deshaun Watson alone. But as far as you looking at that list, is there any surprise to you based on the production that you have seen from these squads so far?
Well, I mean, look, the Browns' offense, they've got – think about it. You when you're building a $260 million cap, right, when you have so many – there's only so many players you can have making over $15 million. And when you look at the Browns, Nick Chubb, Amari Cooper, Deshaun Watson, right, David Njoku, so they have a bunch of really good players on offense that have made money. And then they redo Jerry Jeudy. They, you know, Elijah Moore's on a rookie contract, second round pick. So they're skilled players. And then, of course, their offensive line, you know. And so that's where their talent is. And that's what has to carry them. The problem is their quarterback, who they're paying all the money to, doesn't live up to his part, you know. Whereas the Rams, again, Cooper Kupp makes a lot of money. Haverstein, you know, they've got all the money tied up in Stafford. They've got a bunch of younger players. They signed two offensive linemen, gave them huge money in free agency. So it's a little bit about, you know, it's a little bit about the quarterback and then the decisions the teams want to make in terms of how they spread their cap out. And ultimately it comes down to the quarterback. I mean, the Chiefs, for example, really high-paid offensive line, even though they don't have a left tackle. Kelce is a high-paid wide receiver, tight end. The quarterback's great. They paid him, and he's going to eat up most of the cap, and then everybody else is going to have to fend for themselves.
But if you are, you know, building out an offense, isn't that where you would want the most of your money to go to, though, the offensive line and the quarterback? I feel like that would be the priority, right?
Right. But but again, it's a little bit like, okay, we're going to build it out that way, but we got to draft it. You know, for example, the Giants talk about, well, you know, we want to, you know, we can't win with this offensive line. You know, he says that in February, Joe Shane, and then they don't draft anybody in the next draft. Of course, they signed Runyon. They've signed Jermaine Illuminor. They did that in free agency, but still, you have to draft them. I think what Shaq Khan said the other day, who's been speaking out a lot, we talked about this during the break. He said, look, at some point, us as an organization, we have to stop relying on free agency. I mean, the Jaguars over the last 6 years have been always in the top five of the highest spending teams in the league. I mean, Khan has put his money where his mouth is. His results haven't been very good, but he's paid a lot of money for his team. It's pretty clear he's paid. But the reality here is you can't live off of free agency, and you just can't live off of you've got to draft offensive linemen, you've got to draft defensive linemen, and eventually you've got to replace them when they get too expensive, or you've got to sign them when they become dominant.
The exact quote from Khan, because I did find that very interesting. He said, I think there's a sea of change for us. Bottom line is that our young talent has to be developed. The coaching staff, their priorities all have to change. Their mindset has to change. And went on to say, we can't have this addiction to free agents. And I thought it was interesting too. And I know, like, I don't want to go too far on the Jags because they're not on these lists that we're talking about today. But when they signed Josh Allen this past year and Trevor Lawrence, that's just the third and fourth first round picks for the team to extend and sign with in their own organization since 2008. That says something to me.
No question. And what's happened with them in free agency, and again, we don't want to get down this road on them, but I think that was a direct quote at we are a betting network, right? And so I think the owner has put the onus on Doug Peterson to develop talent. I think what the owner was saying was almost as if he were the general manager. You could almost hear that came from Trent Baalke's mouth, that we've got a lot of good young players. You've got to develop them. And if you guys are getting caught up with just veteran players, then we're never going to have a very good team. And you're right. They don't re-sign guys. They go out and draft Kirk. And typically what happens is with the Jaguars are they sign someone in free agency, and after 2 years they get rid of them. They don't even live out the free agent contract. They eventually just get rid of them, and that's really what happens. And so the art of team building is lost. And team building isn't about how much you have at each position. It's what do you put as a prerequisite to what you deem important. The cap, remember, the cap is like Watergate. Follow the money. Wherever the money is, that's what you think is important.
The Jacksonville Jaguars were an odds-on favorite to win their division last year, obviously fell apart the back end of the season. Houston wins it. The Texans are the favorite at plus 105 to repeat in the AFC South, and Jacksonville plus 275. Okay, so we go from the most expensive offenses going into this coming season. How about the least expensive, the bottom five sitting there with the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Chargers, Titans, and Buccaneers. Among that group, who has outplayed how little ultimately they're paying on that side of the ball?
Well, the Packers are the reason they're least expensive is philosophically, that's who they are. They're going to draft. They don't want to engage in free agency. They don't really like it. They haven't when Ted Thompson was there for years. They want to draft young players. They don't want to give away compensatory picks. They want to accumulate as many compensatory picks. They want to hit with third, fourth, and fifth rounders. And then what they've been able to do is add those players and then develop them. They've done the opposite of the Jaguars. They can develop. Their young receiving core is as good as anybody in the league. They just don't have a high price one because they're all on rookie contracts. Their quarterback's on a rookie contract. Now, they paid Josh Jacobs because they could afford to do that. But he's on really a one-year contract. And their offensive line, they draft and they do a good job. They let Runyon go because they drafted offensive linemen. I think Brian Gutekunst does a really good job. I think he does a really good job of replenishing replaceable parts and hanging on to guys that are not replaceable. And they put money in their defensive front. They just haven't gotten rewards for it. The Steelers are there simply because they're young, right? The offensive line, the two tackles are first-round picks. The wide receivers are second-round pick. They're young. They're very young. And the quarterback's on a minimum deal.
Yeah, the quarterback's
the Chargers
basically
are
free.
Young everywhere. Yeah, exactly. And so the Titans are young, and the Buccaneers, they kind of went a different way, right? They paid the receivers, and they got a quarterback on a cheaper deal. He's not at $50 million. But if they win, eventually Baker's going to want either he's got it built-in incentives or he's going to want to get to $50 million.
So from an executive standpoint, and this is something we were talking about during the commercial as well, like what's the ideal matchup in terms of spending? Like, do you want a perfect 50-50 split? Do you want to play more toward your coach's strengths or opposite? If you have an offensive coach, do you feel like you need to invest a little bit more on the defensive side of the ball? Like, how does that all come together?
Well, I think a lot of it, like, let's take what the Giants are trying to do, right? The Giants are paying a couple defensive linemen, but then they're going really young in their defense because they're going to be very simplistic. And so you can play young players. Tony Dungy believed if he could play, he wanted to have draft picks on defense, young players, right, that and have the system simple enough to where they could play effectively right away and not be complicated and not have to rely on veterans. Now, once those young players got good, whether it was, you know, Warren Sapp or whether it was John Lynch or Rondi Barber or Derek Brooks, you know, eventually they had to get paid. But that's kind of the theory. You go young defense, speed, athleticism, and offense, especially in the line, you want some veteran guys that are kind of have the wear and tear. But what you don't want to be is old and not effective. You know, like Washington doesn't have very much money in their offensive line, and that's because they haven't been able to find talent in the draft there to re-sign it, nor have they been able to hit with, they've always signed second-level free agents in offensive linemen, and it shows you they don't value the position.
Yeah, and Sam Howell got wrecked last year because that offensive line in Washington was so brutal. One team we kind of glossed over a little bit that I am curious a little deeper thought on at five is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They do sign, obviously, Baker Mayfield to come back and lead that group. They've won the division each of the last 3 years. What's the expectation for you in Tampa this season?
They've got to find a running game. They've got to look, Tampa's trying to get their offensive line straight. This 2 years in a row, they finished 32nd in the league in yards per attempt and yards per carry, right? Yards per attempt rushing and yards gain rushing. You can't be that one-dimensional. And yet they've still been able to win the South. That's pretty remarkable, right? They can't run the ball on anybody. And this is even when Brady was there, they couldn't run the ball. But yet somehow, some way, they've been able to win games. It's a credit to Todd Bowles to be able to do that. And I'm not suggesting Todd Bowles is going to, you know, replace George Halas as the greatest coach of all time. But he's done a hell of a job in a one-dimensional scheme where they've got these great players like Evans and Godwin that make plays for them in the passing game. And Baker, who they got relatively cheap, really cheap, has come in and made enough plays, not great, made enough plays to where they're managing them. That's the thing, Stormy. Every quarterback in the league has to be managed, except for Mahomes, probably.
Yeah. They are a 3-1 shot in the division, win total sitting at 7.5 for the Bucs this coming year. We're going to shift gears when we come back to close out the show from the most and least expensive offenses in the National Football League. Take a look at the defensive side of the ball and some of the teams we were just talking about. Obviously, when you're paying X amount of dollars on offense, that impacts what you can spend on your defense. So we'll get to that in a moment. Stay with us right here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN and DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our betting tools and content at VSiN.com as well. Best bets each and every day from our VSiN show hosts and guests. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including columns from your own Michael Lombardi, betting tools, and betting guides like our VSiN NFL betting guide that's out now. Head to VSiN.com/guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get everything we have to offer. VSiN.com, your one-stop shop for all things betting content. We are wrapping up this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We are in a moment going to get to all of our most and least expensive defenses in the National Football League. But First, let's get to our pro tip of the day, which we do each and every day here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's searchable on VSiN.com by sport and by show. And Michael and I talked about it off the very top of the show earlier today with an update on the Dak Prescott news. Obviously, this past week, he had a photo that was taken of him in a walking boot, and it blew up everywhere. All of the reports that we had seen from insiders and journalists were saying that he had a mild foot sprain, nothing to be concerned about going into training camp. There were some other reports from people with betting entities that believed that he had had an MRI. That was their inside information. Yet Dak has come out and said, hey, it was just precautionary. I was going fishing. This is an ankle that I had surgery on a couple years ago. One of those things, anybody who has had an injury knows it's never going to be the same, right? Just trying to be precautionary. I would recommend not reading too much into this news right now. Let's wait until we have something firm during training camp. Right now, it's not information that's worth betting on, because I know we as bettors, we always like to try to get ahead of a number when we have the opportunity. But this ship has already sailed when it comes to fading the Dallas Cowboys in the division. The Philadelphia Eagles have gone from being the second shortest shot to a co-favorite to now a favorite here at a significant difference in price. They're even money in the NFC East compared to the Dallas Cowboys, who are sitting plus 150 right now. People have been betting the Dallas Cowboys win total under. All of these things, you put it together, I'm just not 100% sure it's something that's worth investing in at this moment based on this information. Wait until we have something a little bit more firm. VSiN Pro Tips, again, available at VSiN.com, wherever, searchable by sport and by show, excuse me. So as we welcome Michael back into the show, my friend, let's get into these most and least expensive defenses. Sensing a little bit of a theme here from our last segment where we had the Packers and Steelers among the cheapest offenses. Now we see them 1 and 2 in the most expensive defenses list.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the Highsmith, that cost them money. J.J. Watt cost money. I mean, they signed Patrick Queen, cost money. So, you know, what happens is that.
Looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty with Michael there, but I can go through this list for you while we try to reconnect with him. As far as the most expensive defenses, if we want to throw that graphic back up there, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the most costly, $161.9 million, followed by the Green Bay Packers at $136.9 million. So a significant difference even just from 1 to 2. The San Francisco 49ers, who I was honestly, it's because obviously they're paying the quarterback as little as they are on offense, but defensively, very expensive when you think of some of the talent they have, of course, led by Fred Warner, but that is a unit that year in and year out is expensive. The 49ers have, I want to say it's like 7 players coming into this year that are the highest paid at their position, respectively, on both sides of the ball. So they're sitting there at 3, $125.6 million. The Los Angeles Chargers at 4, $125.5 million. And then the Tennessee Titans at 5, $125.2 million. The Chargers are a team I'm particularly interested in, and hopefully we can reconnect with Michael so I can get his opinion on this. But when we talked about in the last segment, as them being one of the least expensive offenses, yes, they've paid the quarterback. I wonder if there's something from just a higher level conceptual standpoint, a belief that, okay, we have the quarterback. We have Justin Herbert. We trust, like you would with a Patrick Mahomes, that regardless of who the skill position talent is around him, that he's going to be able to distribute and we're going to be able to have success on the ball. So let's turn around, focus on defense, invest more in that side of the ball, allocate more of our resources over there because we know that we're ultimately going to be fine on offense. I don't know if that's the thought process or not, but just something that instantly comes to mind as we look through this list. A little bit surprised that the Tennessee Titans defense is so expensive, just based on at least the production that we have seen to this point. Let's go ahead and throw up the graphic for the least expensive defenses as well. The Los Angeles Rams leading the way as the cheapest unit across the board, just $82.3 million on that side of the ball. And again, correlating with what we saw in the last segment where they're one of the most expensive, actually the number 2 most expensive offenses in the NFL. That's followed by the Detroit Lions here at $84.1 million, a defense that has clearly had a lot of problems over the last couple of years, even last year as they make it all the way to an NFC Conference Championship. That secondary was brutal, and it's a good thing their offense was as dynamic as they were so that when other teams are scoring points on them, they're able to play catch up and exceed expectations from that standpoint. The Kansas City Chiefs at 3, the Panthers 4, and the Minnesota Vikings at 5. Michael, you there?
You got me. I don't know what happened here, Stormy, but somehow we don't even have a storm and I've lost you. So I'm back. I'm on the phone. I apologize for losing you, but I heard you did a great job. You broke everything down. You're just a true professional. There's no question.
What a guy. Appreciate you so much. So I did have one question with you. I'm glad that we could reconnect. Sure. Unfortunately, technology's not our friend. The Chargers are number four on this list for most expensive defenses. And I was wondering, when you have a quarterback like Justin Herbert, if you have like a thought process of similar to Patrick Mahomes, that we have our guy on offense, no matter how much we're investing in some of these other skill position players, he's going to be able to distribute the ball to whomever. So let's allocate more of those resources on defense. Is that sound like a mindset in Los Angeles, in your opinion?
Well, I think this has been a shift, right? I mean, last year, these numbers would have looked completely different with Keenan Allen sure. in the equation, with Eckler in the equation, with Mike Williams in the equation, right? And then, of course, they've had two number one draft picks in the offensive line. And so now, because that Jim has kind of reconstructed the team, no receivers on the team that were picked in the first round or second round from the past regime. And then obviously the running backs, they're signing cheap with Gus Bradley, you know, J.K. Dobbins and all those. But I think this is just a happenstance, because now all their high-priced players are on defense, especially they redid Derwin James's deal, Joey Bosa. You know, he took a pay cut, Khalil Mack, who they signed, and then they brought in other guys. So I just think this is, they're trying to get themselves into a position to where they're going to be more comfortable, and I suspect defensively is where they're going to put their money.
As far as the least expensive defenses go, the top five are Rams, Lions, Chiefs, Panthers, and Vikings. And for a Kansas City team that, for all the offensive talent they have, really led the way on defense, that's what was winning them games. You think they continue to exceed expectations for the price tag this year?
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, they got a hit with, they've been hit with their draft picks. I think that's been really key for them. And that's how you become cheap on defense. So I think you can be cheap and effective on defense if you hit and you work from within the scheme of your team, and is what the Chiefs have done. They've got the right scheme. They found the right players that match the scheme, and life has gone on. So yeah, I definitely think, look, they're going to pay, you're going to pay, like I said, there's going to be 6 to 8 players that are going to make good money. Besides the quarterback. And, you know, if they're all on defense, that's great. You should be great on defense, but you have to make it up in some other way in terms of how you develop young talent.
Those other four teams, Detroit, Los Angeles, Carolina, and Minnesota, is there one of those units that you think can be, again, better than the price tag going into this season? Mm-hmm.
I think it's got to be Detroit, right? I mean, Detroit's got to be able to hit because, you know, they're going to redo Hutchinson's deal. McClain is a defensive tackle who we had Dave Beckett on yesterday talking to him about, you know, who they were going to do next. And I think they're definitely going to do him. He's a really good defensive tackle. They've got to get something out of Marcus Davenport, but they've got enough guys on defense that are young enough that I think if they hit with some of these young players, remember they've been drafting defense, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be the key as they go through this and they get better defensively as they're getting younger, because they've paid their offensive line, they've paid their quarterback, they've paid one running back. They're going to, you know, another running back's going to come up for a contract in 3 years. So, and then they've paid a receiver.
To go back real quickly to the most expensive defenses, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Green Bay Packers, and 49ers, the top three in that group. And obviously, we know, because the Steelers have struggled so much on, like, the Steelers' defense last year was awesome, and their offense just couldn't get them over the hump to win games. Yeah. Does that continue to be the case in Pittsburgh, even with some of the additions they've made on offense?
I don't think so. I think they're going to be so better. I think they're going to be improved coaching-wise. And I think that's going to make everybody better. I think that's ultimately going to be the case. And look, the thing that's amazing about Pittsburgh is they're great on defense and they never play with the lead. Think about that. They're great on defense and they never get in front of anybody.
Unbelievable. God bless TJ Watt for all that he has done. He, by the way, the favorite for defensive player of the year coming into this year, and paid handsomely as such, a big reason why that unit is the cost that it is. Michael, thanks for rolling with the punches today. Sorry that we had some technical difficulties.
Thanks, Stormy. Have a great day.
You too, my friend. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line. Coming up next on VSiN, it's Sharp Money. More great sports and betting content on DraftKings Network as well.